Episode 118 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded February 2nd, Groundhog's Day 2017. Displaced. All right, you ready to just get into it?
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Let's do it.
Hey guys, does it feel to you like we've done this intro before? Like numerous times over and over again?
Oh no, have we?
I don't know, I feel like I've been living this over and over again.
Can you imagine?
That's what you said last time!
Can you imagine?
That's what you said last time.
Doing a podcast week after week, where they just blend together the days. You're looking at this bald-headed nerd. Just looks the same week after week.
You have no idea how last time you pulled out a gun. So this day is already going better.
Yeah, this is true. This is a step up. So this week we are discussing displaced characters, displaced themes. We're going to say characters that are a thematic tie-in through all the shows we're discussing this week. That includes the new CW CD teen soap opera Riverdale. That includes Voltron Season 2 over on Netflix. We're also going to be discussing The Travelers on Netflix. And our last show, Randy, what's our last show?
The Good Place.
The Good Place, of course.
Because The Good Place wrapped up with a phenomenal ending.
Oh, didn't it?
We're way overdue, actually, for talking about The Good Place.
Yes. Yeah.
But I think you guys were waiting on me to finish it up.
Yep. Yeah,
holy
we were.
Holy shit. Yeah, we're going to be discussing all of that. But before we do that, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And do you guys want to do a little bit of house cleaning here?
Let's clean house.
Yeah. So we always, week after week, week after week, week after week, remind you guys that there's iTunes. That's the way you guys can support us.
I will say I don't use iTunes, but today I had decided that there was a bunch of stuff. I have a list at home of things I want to make Grant say.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to do it. I was going to go ahead and download iTunes specifically for this on a laptop. I don't even have any music files on, just to set it up to go give a 5-star review and make Grant say things. And the download failed twice. I figured it was a sign from the universe that I don't need iTunes on my machine.
Maybe that's it.
Maybe so.
Maybe that's the
but
thing
But you other
going
people
on.
That already have iTunes and can't remove it for some reason, you guys should go 5-star review the show and make Grant say things.
Yep, make Grant say things.
Do it, guys. I will say all the things, apparently. Even if I don't want to, Les. Patreon.com/TVDudes. This is another way you guys can support us. If you guys go there, you can make a per-episode pledge. You only get charged if we put up good content for you guys, and we guarantee it's good.
We guarantee it.
We make good shit. And we have one new patron this week, Zach McLernan.
Yay!
Welcome.
Yay!
Thank you very much for your support. So I also want to mention that we have a rebranding a little bit, a slight rebranding that occurred for our new inclusion in the podcast network we're part of.
You know, before we get to that, Grant,
mm-hmm.
You're forgetting a third way people can support us.
Man, I really tried to just smooth transition that in.
Almost you're made it. You almost made it.
It's funny you mentioned smooth because a lot of people don't know. You can make sculptures out of a lot of things.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of us. You can see pictures of us online. You could make sculptures of the TV Dudes and just put them out in your lawn with a sign, maybe like hashtag TV Dudes. Let people know the podcast. Butter sculptures would work.
Ice sculptures, the one of Andy McDowell from Groundhog Day.
Also a good idea.
Randy, I feel we're simpatico because butter sculpture was literally the first thing I thought of too. That would be the material.
What is going on with you two?
That's because if you're going to sculpt, butter is the best material.
I saw a movie on it. It was good.
Oh, boy. Anyway, we are now part of we've been part of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. This
Permanent
is a collective of a bunch of TV podcasts, and we are excited to be a part of it. And if you look at our branding, you'll now see a little watermark at the bottom right corner that says Permanent Record for our show.
Permanent Record.
Permanent Record. So you guys know that that's there. And as a promotional for the next few weeks, we're going to be discussing and promoting some of the other podcasts that are in our network. And the first one that we wanted to discuss is This Is Us with Key and Clyde. So Key and Clyde, they have already been doing another podcast for a while called
Pilot Watching.
Pilot Watching, where each week they'll review a new TV pilot. And they decided to move into their second podcast foray, where they're reviewing week by week the show on NBC, This Is Us. And you guys are able to go and check this out at keyandclyde.com. That is K-E-I and C-L-Y-D-E.com. And they're talking about a show that, I don't know if you guys recall, but I described this show as a sack of saccharine crap.
That was, yeah, that sounds like that was your review. I liked This Is Us. I'm behind on it.
You did like this.
But a lot of people love This Is Us.
Yes.
And Key and Clyde are going episode by episode and talking about it like sort of fresh.
I didn't mean to like disparage their podcast. Oh, no. I just meant like it wasn't a show that I liked. I can recognize that it had great things going for it.
Yep.
But it's just
clearly
not
there's
me.
Enough there that people that I respect are doing a podcast on it. So for the fans of it, it's a hugely popular show. But I came down on the same page as Grant. I thought they had just made a TV show out of a Taster's Choice commercial. That looked like the most treacle thing I'd ever seen. I couldn't do it.
So if you want This Is Us coverage, apparently you're not going to get it on the TV Dudes, and you'll get a much better coverage from Key and Clyde. So you should go listen to This Is Us by Key and Clyde.
Yep, keyandclyde.com. And yeah, they are current and reviewing every single episode.
Yep.
Go check it out, guys. Now let's move on to some listener questions. We got these over on Facebook. So if you guys like us on Facebook, you'll see a post once a week, and you guys can ask us your own questions. First question comes to us from Nick Thies, who says, I liked Voltron Season 2, but could have done without Keith's I have a secret that I can't tell the group conflict. Seriously, Keith, if you, Arrow, and Flash had a sobriety meeting for convoluted secret keeping, no one would ever get past the one-week chip. Ollie, my name is Oliver Queen, and it has been 1 week since Felicity bullshit. What character conflicts would you guys like to see less of in television?
First of all, I want to see that meeting. I think that's fantastic.
Yes.
Because he's not wrong. The secret keeping is getting old. I mean, it's worse on CW than it was on the Voltron, but it was definitely these people are supposed to trust each other, supposed to know each other. It seems silly for them not to be telling each other things that there's no reason not to be telling each other. They've gotten better about it on the CW, by the way. The Flash did it this week that they told Iris something difficult right away instead of holding on to it for six episodes.
Did they wrap up the conflict between him and
Cisco?
Cisco?
Yeah, more or
oh,
less.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that's been pretty much dealt with.
Ugh, good.
Yeah, because that was bad.
But I feel like on shows, when they do something like the secret-keeping trope, it starts out with such good intentions. Like,
yeah.
You want to give your characters depth, and so you know you're going to have one of them have a character flaw where they just don't share enough, but it's always from a place of protection. I mean, that's how Ollie ends up lying every time. He feels like it's a place of protection, and it's never a place of protection. But when you use it, like, five, six times per season for four or five seasons, it just gets beat into the ground, and it turns into, like, watching model trains. Like, maybe a pretty set, but I know exactly where the track goes every time.
Yeah.
You put Oliver down, he's going to lie about something and land there. I feel the same way about Will They, Won't They trope. Like, you see a guy and a girl at the start of a sitcom in episode one, and you go, oh, so it's a season of y'all two. Okay.
Yeah. You know what's nice about Will They, Won't They? There's one of those I got to mention, too, was that one. But when you first approach it, when you've never seen it before, it's really interesting. So I think the reason Will They, Won't They stays in there, it's not for people like us who've watched a ton of TV.
Yeah.
It's for, you know, someone who's just now starting to watch their first TV show and they fall in love with the Ross and Rachel or whatever.
I still remember season one of Friends.
Yeah, me too.
And for season one of Friends, I really cared about Ross and Rachel.
Me too. Now I hate them both.
Yeah,
I
couldn't give a shit.
Yeah. But love triangles in general, I feel like I kind of could use less of.
They work.
I know, but I hate them.
Yeah, it's just, it's inevitable. Yeah.
The other one I want to mention, and this, Dan Feinberg from HitFix coined this term, the vocational irony narrative. You guys know about this?
Mm-hmm. No.
The, like House, he's a doctor, but he's sick and he can't cure himself. The doctor who gets ill and sucked in the morass of the American healthcare system, the fake medium who suddenly starts seeing real ghosts, the lawyer who finds himself charged with a crime, the psychologist who can fix anyone's problems but not their own. Like, if you look at it, it's all over TV drama, and it's gotten really tired.
Yeah, that's a sales pitch technique, and whoever buys shows eats it up.
Yep.
Yeah, it feels like just one step further than giving them an ironic name. I mean, like it just seems like the next, like, ooh, you know, we'll be deep.
Yeah.
Instead of him being ironically named for his career, we'll just make it a character trait.
Yeah.
He's a lawyer, and his last name is Bullshit. It works.
James Woods in Shark.
Yeah. Ty Comstock says, are you getting tired of villains in media that are essentially the same as the heroes, only evil? Speaking examples being, yeah, this is another good trope. Examples being Luke Cage and Diamondback, Iron Man and Ironmonger, Voltron and Zarkon, so on and so forth. It's a trope that I'm starting to notice and is starting to feel a little bit like lazy writing.
Now, granted, a huge part of my TV viewing is The Flash. But yes, I am sick of The Flash fighting speedsters.
Yeah, me too.
Why can't he have a big bad that is not anti-Flash?
Yeah, I agree.
Because it should wrap up quickly, right? It'd just be like, dead.
The speedster plots don't wrap up quickly.
I feel like I'm okay with this because I feel like it's the quality of the writing. The villain being a dark mirror of the hero is sort of an important thing, because then it's the hero facing their own potential darkness or their own, trying to rise above what they could be. And, you know, one of the other obvious ones is when the villain is the opposite of. So, you know, if you've got someone who's
Unbreakable and Mr. Glass.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So that happens too. And I don't think there's anything wrong with either one of those tropes, but you've got to be a good writer to pull them off.
Yeah. I think it always comes down to whether or not you're just filling in the tropes, like you're doing a commedia with like just predetermined roles and you just cast a king and a queen and a jester and a whatever.
Yeah.
That's one thing, and that's usually horrible when you get crap soap opera writing. But if it's done in service of a plot, like you said, if it's a dark reflection of the hero and you're using it to illustrate how one person can go through the same event or two mm-hmm. people can go through the same event and break different ways.
Yeah.
You know, then that's a story you're telling with that trope. And that can be told exceptionally well.
Yeah.
It can also be done. All these things can be done horribly.
Yeah. I will say specifically in Voltron, and I know we're going to steer clear of spoilers because I'm the only one who's seen all the way to the end, but, the Zarkon thing, I actually kind of really liked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jonathan Haftemichael says, hey, TV dudes, Voltron season 2 is great. Since nostalgia and reboots are the name of the game, what 80s or 90s cartoon do you guys want to see get a Voltron-style reboot? A non-hideous-looking reboot of the Jumanji cartoon that could connect to the upcoming movies comes to mind.
one of the things is, if it's the people doing Avatar and Korra, that would be... almost anything they do could be great. I don't care what they do. Mm-hmm. But...
Like a live-action movie?
Sure. Live action movie
of Airbender.
If it was done by the people who did Korra and Avatar, yes.
M. Night Shyamalan's on.
No, he can't have any.
Ah.
Although I did see Split and really liked it. So, but the thing that came immediately to mind is Thundar the Barbarian. Do you guys remember Thundar the Barbarian?
No, I could see Thundar.
Don't they already kind of have something like that going on with that one dude, barbarian guy who's married to Cheryl Hines?
No, that's different.
He's like a cartoon guy in a live-action world.
I hate that show.
But that's a goofy show that sucks.
Yeah.
But I just mean, like, it's the barbarian cartoon, dude. Yeah, Son of Zorn.
Yeah. No, I would want a straight-up, like, action-adventure cartoon like Voltron. I want them to do...
I always conflate them with the Herculoids.
Yeah, I can see that, because it's all sort of fantasy, science, fiction mixed. Yeah, that had Kirby designs, I believe, and it had the guy who was like, so he had like a sun sword.
It looks like the Lost Boy. Yeah.
And it was a cool idea. It was this new sort of post-apocalyptic world where sorcery had risen again, and so it was sort of like science fiction meets fantasy, and I could see a good version of that.
I'm trying to think of, bring back the X-Men cartoon, live action. Do that as a TV series. That'd be awesome.
I want Galaxy High, Kid Video.
Oh.
A new D&D cartoon. Actually, I just want the D&D cartoon.
I was going to say,
just air that.
The D&D cartoon would be good.
And Pirates of Dark Water. I liked Pirates of Dark Water, but I really didn't care for the animation when it first aired. They could up that a little bit. It was a cool story.
Oh, Galaxy High was amazing.
I love Galaxy High.
It was such a fun one. I rewatched like the 4 episodes over and over.
I also want Jason the Wheeled Warriors, just because I want them to use the name Jason the Wheeled Warriors.
Mm.
No Turbo Teen.
All right, let's hit up our last question. This one comes to us from Zach McLernan. Hey, our newest patron. Thank you, buddy. You get to wrap things up here. He says, after much deliberation and debate, I have decided to watch Attack on Titan after many a friend pressuring me to watch it in preparation for the second season. I'll admit that while I have some issues with it, I do find it entertaining and will continue to watch. However, while I used to watch anime more as a kid, as an adult and parent, I tend to have serious reservations now due to uneven quality and issues such as occasional hypersexualization and misogynist treatment of women, particularly of underage women. While anime has its gems, it's a genre that I feel is deeply troubled and generally of middling or poor quality. What are your thoughts? And let me go ahead and go first and say, yes! Yes, Zach! Exactly! That's exactly how I feel.
Oh, good.
Anime is fucking garbage. I hate it.
Good, because I thought this was a trap to get me to admit how old I was.
I saw this question earlier, and I thought the exact same thing. Of nope, you're just correct. End of answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have several friends, most of them younger, who love anime. They're posting about these, and they're watching these 400 episode shows in like, you know, weeks. And I'm like, how do you do that? I can't. All these shows have a billion episodes.
Even if I liked it, how would I make it through 400?
Yeah,
of them in a row?
It's just crazy. And I've seen a couple things. Like, I like Cowboy Bebop just fine.
I've seen quite a bit of Cowboy Bebop. It's
fine.
Good.
That's probably my favorite anime, and I haven't seen all the episodes, and it only has like 20. I cannot do anime.
I really enjoyed the whatever 5 minutes of Afro Samurai I made it through, and like, this is badass. I still don't want to watch anymore.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I mean, every time I hate anime, someone goes, "What about Hayao Miyazaki?"
Yeah,
and I'm like, yeah, but that seems like so counter to all the tropes, everything that makes anime.
Yeah,
he seems to have much more of like a Walt Disney sensibility of storytelling and magic and wonder. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. I really enjoy those movies. But anime, man, I have a reputation over on RageSelect.com of every time we have to play like a JRPG or something anime related, I just spend the entire time bitching about it. I just do not like it.
Not a Final Fantasy fan?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I'm kind of in the same boat with you, and I feel bad because I feel like I haven't tried everything. Maybe there's something out there. I'm like, oh, this is the anime I like. But honestly, no, I'm kind of with you. I feel like most of it's garbage.
I'm bound to be missing some swath of good anime because I only find the rare ones. Like Voltron was good. I did enjoy Voltron. And I've seen other stuff, but I don't want to watch all the variants on Full Metal Alchemist. And no.
Exactly. It's too much.
Sorry, kids. We're old.
It's past us by.
Get off my lawn.
Just a little bit of news here. I'm going to start with what I think is the big news, which is that Marvel's announced their Runaways cast for Hulu.
Oh, awesome.
And most of them are people I don't know, although they're big names. Like, they've all been in shows that you've heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the biggest thing is the guy who's playing Alex Wilder, the sort of the lead of the piece, is a kid from Casual, Renzi Feliz. He was the boyfriend who had cancer in the second season.
I didn't make that far in
Canada. Oh, okay. I didn't know if you've gotten that far.
No.
Anyway, he's great, and I'm really curious to see that. I don't know who any of these other people are, but I look at them, and I'm like, okay, this is, they all look good.
They all seem to have a history of at least a couple different shows under their belt.
Yep. One of them was on The Affair. One of them's been on New Girl, One Day at a Time.
I was also impressed, like, I haven't read Runaways.
Yep.
But looking at the cover and then looking at the covers and the art and then looking at the headshots, I'm like, okay, I can see how these characters kind of fit. They're looking the part.
Yeah, they did a good job casting the look, and they're all experienced actors. So, yeah, I'm super excited, and Runaways is one of my favorite comics, so I hope that Hulu gets it right.
Since they announced this, I've just been hoping that they do it right. The comic's really good.
So what's the general synopsis again for everyone who doesn't remember, like me?
Runaways is about teenagers whose
parents are superheroes.
They discover their parents are a conspiracy of supervillains.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they basically run away, and they each have powers related to what their parents were doing. So one of them is time travelers, one of them is aliens, one of them has like super tech powers.
One's a T-Rex or some shit.
She has a dinosaur.
She has a familiar
a velociraptor familiar from the future. Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. It's such a great series, and it's written by Brian K. Vaughan, who also did Why the Last Man and Saga, and wrote on a bunch of a little show called Lost.
Wrote a little, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's good.
I was going to mention Under the Dome, and you just...
Why would you do that? Why?
I'm saying there's still a chance this could suck ass.
Making a Murderer is getting a season two.
Yeah.
Season two, Making More Murderer. Making Electric Boogaloo.
I mean, you both saw this, right?
Nope. Yep.
Okay, well, I saw it. Randy saw it. He did it, right?
Oh, he totally did it, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
what more do we need to see?
Well, this is case. He's got a new lawyer. Also, the big case is Brendan Dassey, his poor, dumb, like, nephew that got roped into this whole thing.
He might have also done it.
I don't think that kid had anything to do with anything. I think he's just stupid.
He could just be stupid.
But regardless of whether he did it, the law enforcement was all effed up. Like, there was definitely some misconduct going
sometimes
on there.
Sometimes you gotta grease the wheels for a shitty family. I don't know.
Boy, have I got an administration for you to work in, Grant.
is there a good administration right now?
There's a lot of job openings.
Yeah, I don't know. Speaking of which, for some reason, in this current political climate,
yep.
When I saw that this was coming out, I remember how good the first season was and how I was just really into it.
Yeah.
And the second one, I'm just like, there's other real shit in the world. I don't care.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm mildly curious. I don't know that I'll actually watch it, but it is interesting they're doing a second season of it.
I kind of wish they would have chosen another case to do a second season.
Yeah, I agree.
But it sounds like they need a lot of time to, you know, be familiar with a second
case. They're doing sort of documentary stuff.
I was kind of hoping someone else would win the TV Justice Lottery this year. I guess this dude just gets around to.
Yeah.
This is exciting. Netflix's Maniac will bring together Emma Stone, Jonah Hill, and Cary Fukunaga. This is based on a, Norway. It's a series from Norway. There are two characters living out dreamy fantasy lives. In truth, though, they're patients living in a psychiatric ward where they're being treated for their disconnect from reality.
Mm.
So Fukunaga did True Detective, which is dark and weird, and this sounds more like comedy-esque.
Remember the whole thing about him being like, a real asshole to have to work with, like all the rumors swirling around that him and Nick Pizzolatto weren't getting along.
I thought Pizzolatto was supposed to be the asshole.
And then it turned out after season two, Nick Pizzolatto was the asshole that never, like, people have a tough time working with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious about this. I love Emma Stone. Mm-hmm. I tolerate Jonah Hill. And I like
Gary Fukunaga. I'm a pretty big fan of Jonah Hill.
Are you really? Yeah. Something about him bugs me. He's been a lot of stuff I liked. I loved him in Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
I want Superbad. To like him. I liked Superbad.
Yeah.
There's something kind of obnoxious about him that just bothers me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I like him. He's fine.
You bother me.
He's going to... Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
What a way to lash out.
He's going to get to kiss Emma Stone, and that makes me sad.
Yeah.
Finally... Behind Enemy Lines is becoming a TV series at Fox. Now, I know you might be saying, what the fuck is Behind Enemy Lines?
Would this be the Owen Wilson, Gene Hackman vehicle from...
Yes!
It would, in fact, be that.
Less.
Here's what's interesting. This is from a Slash Film article. Apparently, there were a number of straight-to-DVD sequels to this, wherein... instead of Owen Wilson as a Navy navigator shot down over enemy territory, this focuses on different military teams being stuck fixing enemy forces in North Korea, the Congo, and Colombia. The show will not have any ties to those movies. It is going to follow our soldiers on the ground and the officers and servicemen and women on a nearby aircraft carrier, along with intelligence officers in D.C. as they attempt to bring our heroes home safely and under the radar.
Holy shit. So... Okay. This is just in name only an adaptation of Men.
It's like
evac
bloopers.
It's not at all.
And here's my I don't know if you guys, as I was reading that, there were some alarm bells going off. Then I read, Behind Enemy Lines series is being described as distinctly patriotic, joining shows like Shooter that are aiming for the heartland with their American hero programming.
Shooter's aiming for the heartland.
Yeah. I feel like this is Trump TV.
Yeah.
This is like, oh, all those people who voted for Trump watch TV too. Let's give them some of the American heroes. Look, I got no problem with the military. I have plenty of friends who have been in the military. They're definitely our heroes. But this whole jingoistic, they are our heroes bullshit, sticks in my craw. and I'm pissed off that they're making this show. And why isn't this on CBS? This should be on CBS.
I felt that way about six. Yeah. There's a lot on TV right now like that. But wait till after the Super Bowl, folks, when you can watch 24 Legacy.
I love 24 Legacy, though.
And Homeland, are you scared yet? It's going to be awesome.
So, Randy, do you not like Trump?
Oh, no, no. I'm MAGA. Make America great again, man. Trump forever.
So we are going to be talking about, first up, The Good Place, and then we're going to follow that up with Voltron and The Travelers over on Netflix before ending things on Riverdale, just to give you guys a little bit of a gauge on where we're going here. First up, The Good Place. So this just wrapped up its first season, and wow, like, I thought, you know, we discussed this when it hit the mid-season finale, and I didn't know that mid-season finale was more like a three quarters,
yeah.
Four fifths of finale, because there's only like three more episodes left.
Has it been renewed? Did it get a season two?
Yes, it okay. just
did
got
it get renewed.
Because
oh, good.
Seriously, like the way that they ran out that last little quarter of the season in double episode bursts, yeah. almost, it really made me feel like they were maybe just
I don't
shuttling
think they've
off
had
last...
good ratings, but I think that like critically,
people yeah. are fools and
people
should
like
watch
this
show now.
It's a Mike Schur show, so it's gonna struggle. But then it'll become beloved and it'll run for 20 seasons.
So freaking great.
I hope so, man.
This was so good. Yeah.
I would say that there's no way they could keep it up after 20 seasons, but I don't know how they kept it up every episode this season. It's mind-blowing how good the plot of the show is.
This is a philosophy of showrunner that I really appreciate. The don't hold on to something. Just don't hold on to something and drag things out. Just go for it and we'll come up with more story.
Yes, and oh man, I was so grateful. They plowed through it and kept changing the game at the end of each episode. Like, whoa,
yeah.
whoa, what?
Yeah, because just the question of Eleanor and why she was there and if she should have been there or not, that would have been like two seasons of any other show. Like, they would have dragged that out. The question of who left the note at the end of the pilot
episode when somebody leaves the note on her door that I know you don't belong here, that I assumed was the full first season mystery.
Yeah.
They will have just gotten bogged down in the love triangle or quadrangle or whatever angle is going on there.
Instead, they killed Janet in like the seventh episode, I think. And then she fell in love with Jean-Yu, which
marriage is amazing.
That paid off something. That may be the best marriage since Andy and April on Parks and Rec, which also was a Mike Schur show.
And I love the entire explanation for it when Ted Edson's character asks how could this happen? And she says, there was nothing in my programming that specifically forbade it. And he asked.
Yeah.
I love the idea that they just didn't think to specifically put that in the programming for her. And so when someone specifically asked them, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that they keep trying to have sex and they can't figure it out.
You cannot figure it out. And I don't know if it's because she's not built for it and if Jason's just that stupid.
Well, Jason did die by being put in a safe because he forgot to big air hole.
Yes.
So he may be that stupid.
And then he has the snorkel.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Just I'm like only
the
just
small
now.
Little games, the gags, yeah. What do we think? Can we go into spoilers
We
now?
Gotta spoil the ending, because I want to talk about this.
All right, guys, so if you haven't seen this show, can't stress it enough, go watch all of it right now, or hold off a little bit, but we're going to take the next 5 minutes to just really go into some spoilers here.
Yeah, and you should not have this spoiled for you. You really should just go enjoy this. It's wonderful.
Jump ahead, and if you hear us talking about Voltron, just figure out right around there.
So, I didn't see this coming, even though I absolutely should have.
Yeah, nor did I.
Any of us. I mean,
no.
And the name being ironic.
Yeah.
The Good Place. The Good Place. Actually being like even when he wrote it on his sheet.
In quotes.
Yeah, in quotes. I was still like, just not really thinking about it. Like, oh, bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was still thinking, oh, this sad. Like, it didn't it never clicked. I saw her stealing the train, even though I didn't see them finding out about the medium place.
Right.
I saw her stealing the train because I could see the wheels turn of it clicking for her that she's doing all the point stuff and it's self-serving, so it won't count. Like, I kind of saw that bit coming of like, all right, she'll have to figure out that she has to selflessly do it. She'll have to ironically. But again, on any other show, that would have been the big reveal that she has to ironically give herself to the bad place in order to say, but nope, that's not the twist of this.
Yeah, that was good. In fact, the points don't really, it's just like, whose line is that? Anyway, the points don't matter.
Yeah.
So when she does the whole challenge to him of, I know that this is actually the bad place, and Ted Danson does his turn. I know that you really liked it.
I loved it.
I did not like it. I watched his performance there, and it seemed so, like, raisin eyebrow kind of hokey that thought that what was going on was he was in on some sort of act with her character, Eleanor, and they were kind of playing some game against the judge. Because I still wanted to hold on to this idea that he was a good guy.
That would have been so disappointing to me to go to that point and then reveal it was a fake out. That would have bugged me.
I liked it when real Eleanor ran in and tried to keep it up.
Yes, and just like, no, she knows.
No, she knows. Yeah. Stop it.
I actually love that moment. The same moment you seem to hate, I think.
Yeah.
That little smile where we see the evil version of him peeking through. I was like, that was so good to me. Because that means we're going to see a completely different version of Ted Danson's character next season.
And that means that every single person that stood there during Eleanor's... air out the beef with the whole town. Yeah. Like they were all
bullshitting. Demons.
Yeah.
They're all demons.
Yeah. Like the turkey that exploded in the lady's face that she set and chewed.
Yep.
Like they're all just fucking with her.
Yep. Yep. I cannot wait to see what they do next season where they're going to basically redo a lot of this season, but now we're on the joke.
It's like The Flash.
Yes, good.
It's hey, let's go back to square one, but now the viewer has a whole bunch more information that the characters do not.
Yeah.
And you're rewatching this, like, how is this going to play out the second time?
Yeah, because I love that Eleanor gets the note out of Janet's mouth because it's the one place that's a pocket outside of their control because they got Janet, they stole a, like, it's like stealing a half-broke golf cart. Like, they stole a Janet.
Yeah.
And, and so I love that the bad place people, like Ted Danson, doesn't fully understand Janet.
Yeah. Well, no, it's kind of funny because what happens is the accidental thing where they when they murdered Janet and rebooted her, which was sort of selfish, that turned out to be their secret weapon.
Yes.
Like the people behind the good place were
That's
not ready
what
for
screwed
that.
Up Ted Danson's plan.
Yeah.
But so, I liked her having the note that reveals some level of like you're screwed and this is what's going on, but not that much information because she immediately goes, motherforker. Wait, what?
Yeah, the note says find cheaty.
Yes.
And she's like, what's a cheaty?
Yeah.
The fork is...
Yeah.
So what do you guys anticipate for this next season?
I think we're going to see a lot of the same. She's going to get an intro. We're going to be introduced to other people, but I think we're going to see the other side of it. We're also going to see cheaty introduced to his new soulmate.
Well, all four of them still be in town, but just with... different soulmates now, so it kind of expands the cast.
I think so, yeah, and I think that their soulmates will be different demons and that kind of thing. Yeah,
I have absolutely no idea. Are there soulmates?
There may not be. That could have been something they made up.
Did they just make all of it? I mean, I don't know the scope of. Like, I don't know how far they're going to cast the net on how much of this is bullshit. And this show is so endlessly surprising to me.
It is fascinating. Like. Just the psychological warfare going on in this and manipulation.
Well, and beyond that, it's funny as hell.
Yeah.
It's so, it's laugh out loud funny every episode.
It's so well cast. I have a soft spot for Kristen Bell and Ted, but everybody in it is just really bringing their A game.
Janet in particular, when she's playing bad Janet, I love her so much.
Do you guys think that turn was anticipated from the very start?
Yep. I think they knew exactly where they were
going. So you think going back and rewatching, we'll see... what comes across as a good-natured, innocent Ted Danson is going to be a little bit more manipulative?
I think so, yeah.
I'm kind of looking forward to going back and rewatching just to see if he's in on the joke at all.
Yeah, very interesting.
There's no doubt in my mind that they have this whole thing planned out from episode one.
This is one of the best comedies I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be high on my best of list this year.
Even some of the smaller bit characters, the guy that plays Jason... that character is actually so selfish and just such a bad person. When he's like, no, that's great. It'll work out. We can just leave our friends to take the rap for us. It's fine. Problem solved. And he's still sweet.
Yeah.
Like, you still kind of want to hug him. Like, you're horrible.
He's so guileless.
Yes.
It's like, he is selfish.
I don't know where they found that actor.
But it just didn't. It's not that you don't care.
He brings a wide-eyed,
yeah.
Oh, God, Florida DJ.
Well, let's jump over to Netflix to talk about Voltron, which it released its second season, and you guys already plowed through it, or Randy, at least. Sorry,
I made it through five.
I plowed through it. I actually was going to try to, only because we were recording it. Otherwise, it would have slowed down, taken a little slower. But I did get through all 13 episodes, and I know, Les, you got through five. You said so. You were at the same point I was early on. The first five episodes, the team gets separated. They go through a wormhole. And so the first two episodes are about the team sort of being split. And then the third episode is a focus on Shiro, which is also sort of a split. So it's actually not till episode four that they all get together again. Mm-hmm. And even then, they're still like, the focus is sort of on Pidge and getting his like powers. So they really haven't come back together yet, which happens in episode six and seven.
I feel like after coming off of the cliffhanger finale mm-hmm. of last season, when... I mean, at the start of that episode, they are Voltron at a truly badass level. I mean, bringing the sword out from inside the ship and then they just wreck some stuff. And then one of the other things I loved about the first season, they then immediately get their ass handed to them in a way that I feel like rarely happens to the heroes in shows. And then it ends on that cliffhanger. So I liked the first episode back, but then I felt like it fell into case of the week a little bit, and... I'm going to go back and I enjoyed the first season so much. I'm going to go back and watch the rest of the second one. But
I think it didn't
keep that momentum going.
I think
for me.
As far as you go further in the second season, you'll like it more. I'll do say the first episode does have the wormhole time loop.
I liked that.
That shows Corrin getting younger and younger, and that cracked me up.
That was great.
That was really fun.
But Rhys Darby's just great.
Yeah, Rhys Darby's the best part of the show to be in a lot of ways. But episode seven, which is called Space Mall. Is quite possibly my favorite episode of the show yet.
Double L or UL?
Double L. In which the team goes to a space mall.
Okay.
And they run into sort of hucksters. They're looking for different things. They have different adventures. There's a side storyline for Hunk, where he winds up doing what he loves best in a very unexpected way. And there's a security guard. It's their homage to Paul Blart Mall Cop in a way, I think.
Okay.
Which is hilarious.
Okay.
Unlike Paul Blart Mall Cop. And it's a perfect episode that sort of spotlights everybody and what I like about each character and does some fun stuff, but also has like a through line. And it was where the show like took off for me again. And then they've introduced this sort of... You saw them in episode three, the sort of group of Gulron that are working against the bad guys, and they're sort of these honorable space knights, and they do a little bit more with those guys that I really liked. And then they've got a great throwdown finale again. I mean, just a fantastic set piece.
Yeah, because after the end of season one, I wanted them to immediately get back. I loved Zardon.
Yeah,
Zarkon. I loved him having been the first Black Paladin.
They do a lot with that this season too.
That's just great.
Yeah, I did think it got off to a little slow start, but once it gets rolling, I think season two is really great, and I think the second half is pretty fantastic. So I would definitely recommend it to people.
So the Travelers, then, over on Netflix as well. The first season of that just dropped, and the first time I heard about it actually was from Les.
Les has a fondness for time travel.
Yeah, I have a fondness for time travel shows. I knew nothing about this until I turned on Netflix, and it was just on there. Like, so many things are on Netflix now. I mean, seriously, folks, if you don't log into your Netflix every few days, it'll just surprise you with, like, what the hell are these five shows?
Yep.
Yeah. So the premise of this is that there's a dystopian future where a bunch of people are holed up, and almost in like a snowpiercer kind of way.
Very 12 Monkeys-ish kind of.
Yeah, yeah. And they're able to send people's consciousness back in time to a minute before another person in our present day is about to die.
They can send the consciousness back to anybody.
But it's going to kill who it overwrites.
But it's going to overwrite.
So what they do is there's
ethical concerns. They
replace people who they, because they're in the future. They have this sort of very specific time and date. So they know when someone died, and they generally know how and why.
They have
and
to know latitude, longitude, elevation, and time.
Right. And so they send someone back. So we get these very interesting, especially the first episode, and it happens in every episode, sort of a time of death. You get a little timer going, and then the person has like this screaming pain, like a painful death.
Yeah.
But they were going to die anyway, and the traveler prevents that the death that was going to happen from happening, and now they've got this body that they can use, and they fit into their lives. So they, what they're doing is they're from the future. They're using all this historical record. So sometimes they get it wrong. They used a Facebook page.
Historical record being your social media data, and yeah.
They used a Facebook page for, is it Marcy?
Marcy.
Yeah, who was a mentally disabled woman. But they thought she was like a journalist because she did it as a thought exercise with a therapist.
She and her social worker make a fake Facebook page. And of course, that's what the future has on her.
Yeah. And so this woman comes back and all of a sudden she's talking perfectly normally and kicking the crap out of some people who were trying to harass her.
Except that there really is physical damage to her brain and they've sent this consciousness back. And there's a wonderful moment in the show where she just fully realizes that there's no fixing it.
Yeah, she's like, she's going to die. She's in a broken body.
Yeah, like they fucked up. They sent me back to a... There's a percentage of them that don't hit their target.
Yeah. The misfires.
And there are some wonderful... One of my favorite things about this show is that almost every time like a big question of mine came up, like, wait, you're overriding people? Okay, you volunteered to be in the future army, but the person you overwrote in the 21st century didn't.
Yeah.
And immediately the show had a whole premise of the ethical concerns in this, that they try to hit people as they're dying so that they're not as disruptive.
Yeah.
And almost every question like that, they ran into things like that. But there's an immediate moment, an episode or two in, where Marcy realizes that she can't really fix this and they fucked up. Or people misfire in a group. They have 5 out of 6 people land and one person is just confused because everyone else are different people now.
Well, and it's great because they get these missions, and the missions come from the director, which they, you know, the mysterious director. They have all these protocols, like they're not supposed to save or kill anyone that they're not, that doesn't in the historical record die or live. So basically, like, they know when people are going to die, but they're not supposed to save them, no matter what. And so they're kind of fucked up on that.
So they stand and watch bus accidents sometime. Yeah.
And they, I mean, they said their specialist in sort of knowing the history, Philip, was into the body of a heroin addict.
Yes.
Or he's their hacker, isn't he?
No, he's their historian.
He's the historian. And he knows everything.
They make mention that there's been some training and modification. Like it's a lot of information in this guy's head. They're very, very dependent on their historian. I think the team that misfires, their historian is lost.
Doesn't make it. Yeah.
And he has to immediately hand them a wad of cash and tell them 4 bets to go make.
Yeah.
Because he's everything to them. He's their moneymaker.
Yeah.
He knows all of the other times of death for the next couple of years for a bunch of people.
Yeah, so they can get reinforcements.
Because if something screws up, one of those people is going to be your reinforcement. Yeah. And if you screw up, the future knows immediately.
And it's also
it's ancient history to
them. It's like a cell organization. Like they know like one other guy that's like their traveler that greets them when they come in. And they're not supposed to contact each other. And it's really fascinating sort of science fiction.
It's a beautifully messy science fiction show.
Yeah.
Absolutely no one who gets sent back in time understands the plan or can really make any judgment calls over what they're doing. And there's a moment kind of early in the show where they complete their mission.
Yeah. It's episode 6.
And they're all standing around going, do we vanish?
Yeah.
What happens?
And then it turns out, there's still more to come. And also they do some really interesting stuff with like the lives that these people have been stuck in.
Yeah.
Like one of the characters is married.
Yeah.
And has to be with this woman that is, I mean, he has to pretend to know his wife. And at the same time, he is actually in a relationship with one of the other travelers. And that all is going to back up on them because these guys are trying to blend into the 21st century.
They do a wonderful Third Rock from the Sun bit as well of having, I think, Tommy from Third Rock on the Sun, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yep.
He was the oldest of the crew, by far. And he was sent, obviously, the youngest body. Ironic.
Yes, ironic. Trope. Vocational irony narrative.
And they do that trope here. Trevor?
Trevor,
I believe?
Yeah.
Is by far, like by hundreds of years older than everyone in the group.
Yeah.
He's one of the original project team people, and they kind of put his consciousness in cold storage.
He's the one who comes back as a fighter.
And they send him down as a high school kid. He's this high school jock who just suddenly does not give a shit about football anymore.
Yeah, and his like vapid girlfriend doesn't know how to deal with him because all of a sudden he's being nice to other people.
And he's this incredibly zen. I mean, he's just happy to be smelling the air and eating potatoes and like everything's great.
And by the way, they get into these episodes and you're like, every time you think, okay, well, I've got this all figured out, they change something. Like when they reveal the truth about the director, I was like, oh, that's great. And then there's like a faction in the future that's fighting against it.
And you don't know if they created that through fucking something up. I mean, every time I kept thinking it was going to get to Monster of the Week time, and it just doesn't. I hope this got a season two. I love where they leave it.
It's gotten positive reviews. It's got 90% approval on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know if we have any indication on the ratings, but it's Netflix, so you know.
In fairness, I also watched all of Best Friends Whenever on season two, which just hit Netflix as well. So I will literally watch almost any time travel show. But that said, Travelers was genuinely good sci-fi.
Yeah, I'm pickier than about my time travel shows, but this was great.
And I enjoyed this more than Timeless.
Yeah, me too, and I like Timeless.
And I like Timeless.
But this is better than Timeless.
All right, let's go ahead and talk about this CW new teen soap opera Archie comic like revision called Riverdale.
I'm sticking with it. Betty and Veronica Mars. How is this not called that?
Let me give you guys a little backstory.
Okay.
From the world of comics, Roberto Aguirre Sacasa is a playwright who wrote a play that was sort of a riff on what if Archie and Jughead were gay roommates.
Okay.
From there, he spun it into working on comics. He worked on Fantastic Four and that kind of thing.
Did he write Nightcrawler?
He did write a Nightcrawler series. And recently, as in the last like 3 or 4 years, he came to Archie and wrote what was called Afterlife with Archie, which is a book that's still going. It's art by Francesco Francavilla and is a straight up what if the Archie universe was a zombie apocalypse. And it's not goofy. It's not corny. It's basically Walking Dead, but with Archie characters. And it's really, really fantastic.
Ironically, I met him at a comic convention in 2003 or 4.
Okay.
In Dallas, Cape. I think it was the first year of that.
Yeah, okay.
I met him and Robert Kirkman next to each other at a table.
And so Aguirre Sacasa, Afterlife Archie was really successful. They launched a Sabrina book that is like a 1970s period piece that's sort of Rosemary's Baby-esque, which is also great. And then off of that, they relaunched a new look, Archie, Jughead. They've now done Betty and Veronica, Josie and the Pussycats, that is sort of not the sort of goofy, campy Archie that we all know. That is still being published, by the way. They're still making the old classic Archies. But they had like creative, like Mark Waid was the writer who's done a ton of comics. Fiona Staples, the artist on Saga, was the relaunch. And they basically reimagined it as a modern day teen drama. And it's funny and clever and great. But
I do want to say, different from the Riverdale show, on the Archie comic reboot, Waid and Staples, there's an intro on the graphic novel, the first one from Staples, about how much she loved Archie and how scared she was to take the job.
Yeah.
And how the only reason she did it was because the opening of the conversation that Mark Waid had with her, the writer, about it first was, he opened with, for starters, there's nothing wrong with Archie.
Yes. Yeah.
So very much the new reboot of the comic, even though it is brought modern, they don't suddenly decide that like Archie's got to be the most twisted thing ever or dark or anything. It's still very fun and just teen troubles and stuff. The Riverdale show, I feel, is a lot more twisted and dark.
Aguirre Sacasa, again, he did Afterlife with Archie, so a little twisted and dark. He became the publisher of Archie. He's like the president of Archie, and he's the guy who wrote Riverdale. And that's why I wanted to give you all that backdrop. This guy has comic
lit
cred.
References in this show, I kind of felt like that had to be.
And he's definitely a guy, he's a playwright, he knows his comics, he knows his Archie. Like, I think he loves these characters, but he also wants to subvert them.
So, taking a look at this show, for anyone who's not really that familiar with Archie, this is a show about this high school in Riverdale where Archie, this redhead kid, he's really into music. He has the body, the build to also be an athlete on the football team, but he does it a little bit begrudgingly.
He's also nerdy and sensitive.
He's a nerdy and sensitive guy who's got a ripped body. That construction, fuck off.
Yeah, concrete did not give you...
No, it did not. He also has a little bit of a love triangle going on between two girls, one who's the down-to-earth... Girl next door, Betty, and then the fancy, rich, untouchable Veronica.
Well, there's the girl that he's been next door to his whole life that the whole town and everyone who's ever met him just assumes that they're a couple or are going to be a couple.
Betty Cooper.
Betty, and then there's New Girl.
And the New Girl who just comes to town is Veronica Lodge.
Lodge.
And yes. I actually really liked what they did with Betty and Veronica here, because in the comics, the whole sexist thing that's been Archie forever was that Archie had to choose between the hot, rich bitch Veronica.
The evil brunette or the wonderful blonde.
And the sweet blonde. And instead, Veronica is like, this is like an alternate universe, because usually Veronica is like daddy's girl. Mm-hmm. And in this one, daddy is being arrested for insider trading and fraud. And so mommy has had to go back to her small town roots of Riverdale. And Veronica
daddy's
is getting
not out of the picture.
No,
because
he's going to be around.
There's a reveal in the pilot
was
episode.
That, was that Ava Longoria?
No, I don't think so. The only person I recognized in this was Luke Perry.
Luke Perry.
Luke Perry's playing Archie's dad.
She looks super familiar.
But so Veronica is basically coming back to their small town, where she has like a penthouse, but doesn't have all the money anymore.
I love the explanation for how Veronica and her mom are back in Riverdale.
Yeah.
It's just a one line thing, and as Veronica's going, and we have to live here. It's the only piece of property that was in my name,
yeah,
and not your father's, who is assets frozen. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was very clever. And as a result, we get a Veronica who's not so entitled, who's not so full of herself. And so she and Betty form a friendship, and Veronica even stands up for Betty. And so they've transferred a lot of that bitchy nemesis to Cheryl Blossom, who's a psycho in this.
Yes.
And
absolutely insane.
But an entertaining psycho.
Scenery chewing. I mean, Travolta could play that role.
Yeah. This whole thing reminds me of something like Bring It On.
Yes.
There are no stakes of any real merit, but I still care about all the characters and want them to achieve their goals.
I did not anticipate the neon-cranked cartoonishness of Archie Universe being translated to CW would result in quite this weird a tone.
Yeah.
It started out a little Twin Peaks-ish for me, but I think it ended more on Heather's.
Yeah, everybody keeps saying Twin Peaks, and I'm like, it's weird,
Heather's more than,
it seems a little Veronica Mars. I thought that was a good call there, Les. But also, I mean, the nods to like both Dawson's Creek and even Smallville, and how CW does teen drama.
Yeah.
It really just kind of echoed that in a way that I didn't like.
I loved it. I was really happy with it.
Yeah, I was really surprised how much I enjoyed it. They rushed through some things that didn't quite work for me. Archie's sudden interest in music was a little weird.
Yeah, but how great was their Josie and the Pussycats take?
Actually, that I loved them. That scene had too much exposition for no reason.
Yeah.
Josie explaining the ears shouldn't have gone there.
Think they should have explained it?
Well, there's no need to. Everybody knows damn well who Josie and the Pussycats. Like, they've got the ears on because they're Josie and the Pussycats.
But I feel like
they could have waited on her explanation of that.
I guess.
Archie didn't say shit to her and didn't ask for anything, nothing. I'd like to talk to you about some songs. She stands up and makes like a three-minute-long speech that ends with, and it'll never happen. Like, bitch, he never asked you for anything. What'll never happen?
I'll say this. One of the issues that the show does have, the dialogue is real on the nose just about throughout. And I actually appreciated that, but
Veronica's
it definitely
straight up Breakfast at Tiffany's and this place is in cold blood.
Yeah.
There were a couple of lit references that I was like, that's just writers having fun. There's nobody in this town.
I love their take on Kevin Keller, who's a fairly recent addition to the canon.
I was wondering if he was in.
Yeah, he's a fairly recent addition. Moose being his closeted lover is a new thing.
That was hysterical, though. That line was hysterical.
Yeah. That was a great bit where he's like, just no kissing.
So
he's like,
I
love
gay,
a good closet
what
case.
Would you do? Anything but kissing.
Yeah, that was so good. And he's so into it. And I also love when Veronica comes over, or Cheryl comes over, and says something about, like, is the bitch prom queen still a thing? She's like, is the gay best friend still a thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was, they're very aware they're playing with cliche, and they're asking you to come along with it.
Like, Veronica, the kiss, the lesbian kiss.
Exactly, that was too far. That was so weird.
Oh, and the one other.
But the line
I did enjoy
right
her,
after,
yes,
where she's just like, it's so 1994 cliche or whatever.
Yeah, because
my
jaw was open during that moment of like, oh God, this is the first full misstep of what the hell are y'all doing?
Yeah.
And then to have Cheryl just immediately shut it down of like, please.
Yeah.
Like, Brittany Madonna,
the one misstep I think they made is the Miss Grundy thing.
That's. I like Archie knowing that what love, like knowing what that feels like.
Yeah.
So he knows he's not in love with Betty. That's a neat, I like the triangle, but the casting of her and the whole, the low, like her pulling up in the bug. And I was like, and then her being weird now.
Yeah.
I was going, no,
like,
no,
you
lady,
seduced him.
You slowed a car down for a what, 15, 16
yeah.
year old?
Yeah, you slow.
I don't know what state Riverdale's in. I know it's probably legal, but
the other thing though is that it calls attention to a problem of casting and these kind of things where you've got 20 somethings playing teenagers. Although yeah. apparently the actor playing Archie is 19. So, and the actress playing Mrs. Grundy,
you should be able to get some advice from his dad.
She's 34. Wow. So I'm like, that's a big age difference, but it doesn't look it. She looks younger. He looks older. And as a result, it's like, what are they, 2 years apart?
Yeah.
So that's a casting misfire maybe, but it's a weird call because I feel like I know they wanted to have a reason why they wouldn't mention the gunshot, but I feel like there could have been any other way to do it. And it was the thing that's like the most lurid of all the rest of the stuff in the show. And I feel like it was a misfire.
Yeah. Even the weird little montage of like,
yeah,
random aside, Reggie.
Yeah.
The casting of that douchebag.
Yes.
I don't know where they found that actor, but his like exuberance and joy for being a douchebag just seems to be great. Like,
well, that's a great re-envisioning of Reggie, because Reggie's always been the
scheming,
first of all,
smarmy.
He hates Archie.
Yeah.
And he's like a smarmy 50s. He's a guy who's in every fraternity. And instead, they made him a guy who's in every fraternity now. He's buddies with Archie, but in the way that Archie just doesn't want to even hang with him. He's like, I don't want to be friends with this douchebag.
I think the person on the cast with maybe the most acting experience outside of Luke Perry is Jughead.
Yeah.
His Sweet Life with Zach and Cody.
I love their Jughead take, by the way. Him sort of the moody outsider, you know, observing it all.
I started the episode thinking how much I didn't like them. The whole point of Riverdale is that there's not a murder and it's not dark and everything. Sure. And then I started thinking, well, if there was any one character who would be sitting in Riverdale going, y'all don't see it, there's a seedy underbelly and all of you are too stupid, it would be Jughead.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also like the idea of, that's how bad this murder is.
Yeah.
This town is not ready to be Pretty Little Liars.
Right.
They're about to be.
The other thing I think is interesting is I sort of already went through my you can't do the Star Archie period, because Ed Brubaker's last story on Criminal was a straight up riff on Archie, Veronica, Betty, him getting older. He'd married the Betty and now he wanted to go back to Veronica. And if you know Criminal, it's noir. So there's murder and lies and adultery and all this kind of stuff. And I got to think that was influential here, that he was like, that was kind of fun. What if we did with the actual Archie characters?
Yeah. I don't know. I've mixed feelings on it. I thought there were some parts that were really good. Overall, it did a good job of keeping my attention, but it's just not my thing.
I really liked it and did not expect to like it as much.
I got a slot open for a sappy teen soap opera, and this will do nicely.
Yeah, I'm kind of it's doing something nothing else is doing, and it's another great CW show.
I'm looking forward to y'all's new spinoff weekly podcast discussing Riverdale. It's gonna be great. All right, guys. Well, we're gonna go ahead and wrap it up there. Thank you, listeners, for checking this out this week. Thank you, Les. Thank you, Randy.
Thanks, Grant.
And until next week,
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.